ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This will had come about in the most suspicious circumstances you could possibly imagine.
Who gets what when someone dies, and who decides?
The difficulty with undue influence often is proving it.
Join me, Damien Carrick, for the Law Report special series on wills, Over My Dead Body.
The person felt like they had no option. It's difficult to prove that.
To hear, search for The Law Report and look out for Over My Dead Body. Find it on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, about 350 kilometres above our heads, a high-stakes, high-speed rescue mission is underway. One of NASA's space telescopes is slowly falling back to Earth, and another spacecraft has been launched to try and literally push it back up again. But what happens when the rescue robot needs saving itself? This is Lab Notes from ABC Radio National. I'm Jonathan Webb, and today I'm talking to Dr. Sarah Webb, an astrophysicist at the Swinburne University of Technology. G'day, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, this sounds like an extraordinary problem-solving effort. Has this been done before? Have we ever launched a mission to push something further back up into space?
Not quite like this. This really is a once-in-a-lifetime Hail Mary effort to save this telescope. And so for context, we have all of these different things in orbit around the Earth. Some are satellites, some are telescopes, some are different assets that we rely on every day. But one tricky thing when you've got something in orbit is that often it doesn't stay in orbit. They tend to decay and they can fall back to the ground. And so one of the main comparisons I can kind of make is maybe the Hubble Space Telescope. I think a lot of us love Hubble, have been connected with it for decades now. Mm. And Hubble, probably the closest kind of rescue mission, was actually in 1993 when Hubble got boosted to a higher altitude to try and prolong its life. And it certainly did a wonderful job. It's still alive and well and working today. But that was done with a space shuttle, not with an autonomous robot with three grappling arms traveling at 8 kilometres a second.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those details. Let's learn a little bit about the telescope that's in trouble. It's the SWIFT Observatory. What does it do and how long has it been up there?
So the SWIFT Observatory is one of our most fabulous telescopes because it looks for something called high-energy light. So it's looking for gamma rays and X-ray bursts. It was launched in 2004, so it's been operational for over 22 years, which is just majorly impressive, but even more so when you realise the original mission was only meant to be 2 years long. Mm. So it really has been a workhorse. And the reason it's so important, especially to us astronomers, is that it's able to see light that we don't see here on the ground. Gamma rays and X-rays that don't make it through our atmosphere, we can study from in orbit.
Amazing. But it's just slowly losing altitude and doesn't have any thrusters of its own to try and push itself further up?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this telescope originally sat about 600 kilometres above the Earth in something we call a low Earth orbit. And it doesn't have any thrusters or any fuel left anymore to do any conditioning boost to try and lift itself up. But what happened over the last couple of years, and many listeners might have actually got to experience some of the effects of this, is that we had a really active solar period. We got spoilt with aurora down under in places that most people had never seen them before.
Mm, I remember.
It was spectacular and it was really memorable. But unfortunately, a consequence of that is that our atmosphere puffs up as we get these charged particles that hit us.
Right.
Yeah, and it slows things down. It essentially increases the drag on telescopes, on satellites, and SWIFT really got affected.
It's been pushing through the headwinds of a puffy atmosphere and slowing down faster and faster.
It really has. And it's got, you know, nothing to save itself, essentially. And so it's already dropped to 300 and about 40 kilometres above the Earth. And we know that once it drops to about 300 kilometres, that's kind of the end time. That's when we can't save it anymore and it will burn up in our atmosphere.
So what's NASA trying to do about it? They've actually hired another company to send the rescue mission. What's going on?
They've hired a company called Catalyst Space Technologies. And last year they announced a tens of millions of dollar contract to say, we need you to essentially build a spacecraft that can go and grab onto Swift and essentially throw it into a higher orbit. So you know those claw machines that you often see at arcades?
Oh, grabbing toys and lifting them into the tray.
Exactly. NASA said we would like that for space.
But for a space telescope. Okay.
And Catalyst said, yes, we can do that. And it is very rapidly heading towards trying to save Swift, although we've had a couple hiccups along the way.
Yeah, I really want to get to the hiccups, but it's not just high stakes, it's high speed, right? Swift is going how fast, and how on earth does the Link robot catch it?
Things that are in low Earth orbit are travelling at least 8 kilometres per second.
Blimey.
And now, just wrap your head around that, it's insane. It really is very fast. And so you've got this spacecraft that's travelling at 8 kilometres a second, falling back to the ground. You've got the Link satellite, which is trying to chase it, not only chase it, but then manoeuvre itself to be close enough, but not crash into it, to then assess it to figure out where can it use its grappling hooks, its claw mechanism to grab onto the spacecraft. It is high stakes, it's high stress, and it's really complicated because you're at the whim of fundamental physics, really.
Stressful enough. And then not long after launch, the Link craft got into some trouble. Sarah, what happened?
It did. Unfortunately, it started spinning rapidly, very rapidly. And so it was spinning once every 40 seconds. So you can imagine an object just tumbling through space. And what happened is there's different actuators, different things on a spacecraft that allow it to move. And it has 3 of these kind of flywheel actuators. 2 of them are inoperable.
And oh, so blimey.
It really was the worst case scenario. Many people just assume that this might have been it for the mission.
Yeah, spinning out of control and has 1 out of 3, like, actuators left. That doesn't sound good.
It doesn't. It sounds horrendous. It really, even I myself, when I was reading the updates, went, oh, well, you know, that I'm going to have to mourn Swift, one of my favourite telescopes that I've had the privilege of using. But then we had a Hail Mary moment just days ago. They announced that they were able to do something very, very clever. They were able to update the way that the spacecraft works. So essentially the code, the underlying computational mechanics.
They did a software update.
So they basically redesigned how they were going to use the assets that they had. So they had these actuators, which helped with direction. They also had the ability to thrust. So to essentially, this is what they're going to use when they grapple onto Swift, is to burn fuel to push in a certain direction. And so they were able to do a clever update to use some of that thrust and one of the actuators that was still working to be able to, again, it's a game of physics, move the spacecraft in just the right way that it could slow down the spin.
Sounds like classic space mission work the problem stuff, doesn't it?
It really does. Hollywood doesn't lie when it comes to this.
How long have they got before Swift reaches this point of no return that you mentioned before?
They've only got months. We think that Swift will essentially reach that point of no return by November, December this year. And once that happens, it will rapidly decay and burn up, which means that Link itself has about one month, 30 days to figure itself out, to get close enough to Swift to evaluate and to grapple on to do that burn.
So we're hoping to hear good news sometime in September. Do you have a sense of what the chances are of success at this point?
Oh, I don't. I think we're very reserved. I think when it comes to space, especially in the space industry, we know it's really difficult and anything you can do is innovative and clever, but the chances of success might be low. I hope that we've got a good chance, a fighting chance, because this really is a test bed for not only could we save Swift, this incredible asset, but if it works, could we use these Link spacecraft, this similar type of design to save other assets, say the Hubble Space Telescope, other satellites that are important, Earth observation satellites. If we prove that this works and it's relatively low cost, you know, tens of millions of dollars, not billions of dollars to save an asset, maybe it's worth it. Maybe we'll see it happen again and again.
A new era of pushing things back up again to get a bit more life out of them.
That's right. And if we could do it with Hubble, I would be absolutely stoked.
Yeah, more of those pictures. Yeah, I think lots of us would sign on for that.
I think so.
If they manage to succeed on this Swift Observatory rescue mission, Sarah, what would you like to see the telescope still accomplish in its next few years?
I have many, many answers for that. So one of my favourite mysteries. We've got a couple mysteries in astrophysics, but one of my favourites, it's called a fast radio burst. Now, we don't know what causes fast radio bursts. We know that we get a burst of radio light that lasts for milliseconds, and they're very far away. They're at galactic cosmic scales, but we don't know what causes them. And it's probably something very cataclysmic. It's probably a black hole or a neutron star or a magnetar doing something amazing, but we can't figure out what yet. And I think having access to high energy telescopes like SWIFT might help us unlock those answers if we're lucky enough to catch a nearby FRB.
You make a good case, Sarah. That sounds pretty exciting.
I'll take it to Congress. I'm ready to fight for SWIFT.
Thank you so much for sharing your lab notes with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Dr. Sarah Webb is an astrophysicist at the Swinburne University of Technology. This episode of Lab Notes was made on Gadigal and Ngunnawal and Ngambri country. It was produced by Amy Briggs, and I'm Jonathan Webb. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.